Imagine, just for a second, that you spend your entire life carefully building this beautiful, incredibly sturdy house for someone you just love fiercely.
Right.
And you pour all your resources into it, you secure the foundation, you put on a really solid roof because you desperately want them to remain safe when you're no longer around to protect them.
Yeah, of course. That's the dream.
But then, on the exact day you finally hand over the property, you realize you made this fatal error. Mm-hmm. You accidentally locked them inside and you threw away the only key.
Wow. Yeah, that devastating image really perfectly captures the reality for just countless families out there.
It's terrifying.
It is. They try to leave an inheritance to an autistic adult only to unknowingly lock that individual out of the very government systems they, you know, they rely on to survive. It's really a trap built entirely out of good intentions.
And that is exactly why we're here today. This installment is part of OasisForAutism.com's At a Glance audio series. Today, we are pulling our insights directly from a truly eye-opening book. It's called When the Bus Stops Coming by Jim Palasty.
Such an important read.
It really is. And you can find it right now over at OasisForAutism.com. Our goal today is to actively educate, empower, inform, engage, and encourage you to take absolute control of your family's future.
Absolutely.
We're taking a deep dive into Jim Palasty's critical insights on estate planning to expose this shocking reality about how rigid federal bureaucracies interact with standard financial planning.
Because it's not what people expect.
Not at all.
Yeah.
So whether you are navigating this specific dynamic in your own family, or you simply want to understand the hidden mechanisms of our social safety nets, we're going to explore the traps most people never see coming and how to permanently disarm them. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, we really need to start by looking at the default setting for most families. I mean, most parents just assume that drafting a standard will and leaving their estate equally to all their kids represents the ultimate act of parental responsibility.
Right. That's what we're all taught to do.
Exactly. But for a family with a disabled adult receiving supplemental security income or SSI and Medicaid, that standard will actually acts as a financial weapon.
Which brings us to the core mechanism of this trap. Like, what is it about the federal government's rules that turns a simple inheritance into an absolute disaster?
It really comes down to inflexible, federally mandated asset limits. Both SSI and Medicaid operate with a strict cap on what an individual can own.
Okay.
And that limit is exactly $2,000.
Wait, $2,000?
$2,000, yeah.
In today's economy, that number feels almost fictional. I mean, that barely covers a couple of months of groceries and basic utilities. It certainly does not cover lifelong specialized care. Why is the number so incredibly low?
You really have to look at the history to understand the mechanics of the bureaucracy here. Congress established that $2,000 limit back in the late 1980s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And at the time, they deliberately chose not to index it for inflation. So we are forcing disabled individuals today to operate under 1989 economic rules while they're facing, you know, modern day medical and living costs. There is zero flexibility built into the system.
That is wild. Let's walk through the scenario Palasty details in the book. Imagine a family leaves a very modest inheritance to their disabled child. Let's say $50,000. As a parent, you assume you just provided a crucial safety net.
Right. You think you did a good thing. But the reality plays out much differently. Within a week of that $50,000 hitting the disabled individual's bank account, the Social Security Administration audits their ledger.
And they see the money.
They see it. They see the $2,000 allowed limit, and they immediately classify the remaining $48,000 as excess resources, and the consequences just strike instantly.
So the government just cuts them off?
Entirely. The SSI payments halt immediately. Furthermore, their Medicaid coverage vanishes, often on the exact same day.
Man. Let's explore the actual human cost of losing Medicaid, because we aren't just talking about losing a generic health insurance card here. We're talking about the complete collapse of a survival infrastructure.
Exactly. I mean, losing Medicaid means losing the funding that pays for ongoing behavioral or physical therapies. It strips away coverage for vital daily medications and necessary medical equipment.
Which are so expensive.
Unbelievably expensive. And perhaps most devastatingly, it destroys the funding for community support services. Mm. You know, the daily programs, the specialized transportation, the in-home care aides, the things that allow that individual to actually live a supervised, integrated life in their community.
So just because a parent tried to be generous, this $50,000 inheritance suddenly becomes the sole fund for all of that incredibly expensive specialized care. And Medical costs burn through $50,000 terrifyingly fast. When that money inevitably drains down to zero, the child faces a future entirely stripped of their previous safety net.
They find themselves right back at square one, completely destitute. They have to reapply for all those benefits, push through the massive bureaucratic friction all over again, and endure a really traumatic disruption in their daily routine.
It's like throwing a drowning person a heavy chest of gold. I mean, you're trying to give them wealth, but you actually just sink their life raft.
That's a great way to put it. And what's fascinating here is how the broader financial industry completely misses this dynamic.
Really? Even the professionals?
Oh, yeah. Standard financial planners or general practice attorneys frequently apply this, like, cookie-cutter approach to a highly specialized situation. They just fail to recognize that direct inheritance destroys the beneficiary's safety net.
So once a parent finally realizes the government system is rigged against a direct inheritance, human nature kicks in, right? They look for a workaround, yeah. And usually they look right at their other neurotypical children. Ballast calls this the disinheriting myth.
Yes.
They decide to leave all the money to the other kids, expecting them to use those funds to pay for their disabled siblings' care.
It is an incredibly common strategy, and it is arguably just as dangerous as the $2,000 trap itself.
Let me push back on this a bit, though, because if I'm a parent, you know, I look at my kids and I see that they love each other. Siblings step up during crises all the time. Families rally. Does a family really need to set up complex legal structures? Aren't we just overcomplicating basic family loyalty and trust?
I get why parents think that. I do. But relying purely on sibling goodwill is not a plan. It's an abdication of responsibility.
Ouch. Okay.
By quietly disinheriting your disabled child and expecting the siblings to foot the bill, you accidentally breed deep resentment. You generate immense financial instability. You essentially hand a sibling a 50-year obligation, but you give them absolutely no legal framework to manage that obligation.
How does it create financial instability for the neurotypical sibling, though?
I mean, yeah.
They're the ones receiving the inheritance, right?
We really have to examine the brutal tax realities of this do-it-yourself approach. When a sibling receives that inheritance, it legally becomes their personal property.
Right.
If they use their own money to pay for their brother or sister's care, they receive zero tax deductions for those expenses. The inheritance gets taxed when it comes in, and then they spend it on care without any protective tax structure.
That makes sense.
And furthermore, the parent who earned that money in the first place loses all control over how those funds are actually utilized.
Right, Pelosi's text highlights this loss of control perfectly. A parent might have incredibly specific directives in mind for that money. Like, you might want $20,000 explicitly spent on securing safe housing. You might want $15,000 dedicated to transportation, like a modified vehicle.
Exactly.
And you might want $30,000 locked in for specific high-level behavioral therapies.
And those are highly specific, vital directives that require careful, ongoing management.
But if you just dump a lump sum into your neurotypical kid's bank account with a whispered, please take care of your brother, all of those directives just vanish.
They're gone.
You leave behind emotionally devastated kids grieving your loss, who are now forced to argue over vague wishes. One sibling might insist mom wanted round-the-clock care funded immediately. Another sibling might insist mom wanted the money saved strictly for medical emergencies.
It creates such a volatile scenario. One sibling might make enormous personal and financial sacrifices, while another sibling just treats the inheritance as a personal windfall. And amidst all this chaos, the disabled sibling possesses nothing legally designated for their own support. They are entirely dependent on the shifting moods and financial stability of their siblings. Which brings us to a fundamental misunderstanding parents have regarding the word equal.
Yeah, parents face immense guilt. They are terrified of playing favorites, so they just want to cut the estate perfectly down the middle.
We must redefine what equality actually means in this context. Treating children equally when their baseline needs are radically different creates deep systemic inequality.
That's a really powerful way to frame it.
It's true. If one child requires lifelong specialized support simply to survive and participate in society, while another child is completely independent, an equal monetary split is inherently inequitable.
True fairness means meeting each child's actual needs, rather than just doing simple division to make yourself feel better.
Precisely. Providing for actual needs often dictates that the shares look unequal on paper. The disabled child might require a significantly larger portion of the estate to secure their baseline quality of life. Or, conversely, they might require a smaller, highly targeted portion designed specifically to supplement government benefits.
So, since a standard will fails, and relying on the honor system with siblings backfires spectacularly, families need an actual shield. They need a system that protects the money without destroying the benefits.
Yes. The foundational tool for this protection is the Special Needs Trust, or SNT.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's break down how this trust actually functions.
A special needs trust acts as a highly specific legal structure that legally separates the inheritance from the disabled individual's countable assets.
So it's essentially a specialized vault. The government can clearly see the vault exists. But because your child does not hold the combination to open the vault themselves, the government doesn't count the gold inside against that $2,000 limit.
That is a very effective way to visualize the mechanism. The critical component here is the designated trustee. The trustee holds the combination to the vault. They possess the exclusive legal authority to spend the trust money directly on your child's needs.
Okay, so the child can't just go in and grab cash.
Right. And the beauty of this structure lies in its flexibility. The trustee can spend that money on things intentionally refuses to cover things that drastically improve the individual's quality of life without those expenditures triggering a reduction in federal benefits.
Because instead of handing the child direct cash, which triggers the penalty,
right,
the trustee purchases the specialized wheelchair directly from the vendor.
Exactly.
The trustee pays the rent for the safe housing directly to the landlord. The trustee hires the extra behavioral therapist and pays them directly. So the child receives the full benefit of the wealth, entirely separated from the burden of the asset.
It fills the massive gaps the federal system leaves open. However, we cannot ignore the logistics and the cost of building this structure.
Yeah, let's talk dollars and cents. A basic will costs practically nothing. You can download one or pay a lawyer a few hundred dollars. You sign it. And when you pass away, it goes through probate.
Which is public.
Right. Probate operates as a public court process.
Yeah.
It's slow, and your entire estate becomes public record. Setting up a private vault sounds considerably more expensive. What kind of upfront cost are families looking at?
A comprehensive estate plan, which typically includes the special needs trust, a pour-over will, guardianship succession documents, and durable powers of attorney, requires highly specialized legal work. Depending on the complexity of your estate, this package generally runs between $1,500 and
$3,500. Man, for families already drowning in the high daily costs of specialized care, a $3,000 legal bill sounds like a massive hurdle.
I know, it does. But you have to evaluate the return on that investment. You spend a few $1,000s up front to definitively prevent the loss of tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of dollars in vital government benefits over the course of your child's entire lifetime.
That puts it in perspective.
Mm. You construct a $3,000 shield to protect a $1 million lifetime safety net. The mathematics strongly favor building the trust. But to build it correctly, you cannot simply hire the general practice lawyer down the street who handles real estate closings. You must assemble a specialized team.
Palissy outlines a very specific dream team required for this process. Who exactly needs to be on this roster?
The first and most vital member is a specialized special needs attorney. They cannot be a generic estate planner. They must possess an intricate working knowledge of complex mechanisms like ABL accounts, Medicaid waivers, and pour-over wills.
Wait, let's clarify those terms for a moment. You mentioned an ABLE account and a pour-over will. How do those actually work in tandem with the trust?
An ABLE account is a specific tax-advantaged savings account created by federal law. It allows individuals with qualifying disabilities to save up to $100,000 without that money counting against the $2,000 Medicaid limit.
Oh, that's huge.
It is. A skilled attorney knows how to structure the special needs trust to feed money into the ABLE account for daily smaller expenses, giving the disabled individual a measure of financial autonomy without risking their benefits.
And the pour-over will.
A pour-over will acts as a critical safety net. Imagine you set up the perfect trust, but years later you open a new savings account and just forget to title it in the name of the trust.
Happens all the time.
Right. If you pass away, that account would normally go directly to your child, triggering the benefit loss. A pour-over will automatically catches any forgotten assets and pours them directly into the special needs trust, bypassing the child's personal bank account entirely.
That makes perfect sense. Next on the Dream Team roster, Palissy lists a financial planner.
A financial planner who explicitly understands special needs planning. They map out the long-term tax implications of funding the trust. If you sit down with a financial planner and their first suggestion involves leaving money directly to your disabled child, you need to find a different planner immediately.
Good tip. Then we have the trustee. This seems like the most demanding role of the entire group. Palesti mentions they make the daily judgment calls. What does that actually look like in practice?
The trustee carries an enormous, rigorous burden. They actively manage the fund on a daily basis. They must meticulously review every single request for funds. If the disabled individual needs a new computer for therapy, the trustee cannot simply hand them $500 in cash.
Because that violates the rules.
Exactly. The trustee must purchase the computer directly from the store. Furthermore, they must maintain exhaustive records of every receipt and every transaction, constantly ensuring that no expenditure inadvertently acts as direct income to the beneficiary. It requires constant vigilance.
Rounding out the team, Palesti emphasizes the need for a specialized accountant. Why can't a family just use their regular tax preparer?
Because special needs trusts operate under highly complex, compressed tax rules. These trusts generate income through investments, and they face severe tax penalties if mismanaged. An accountant who explicitly understands these specific trust tax returns prevents the trust from being decimated by the IRS.
So what does this all mean? As a parent, your new job title is essentially project manager. You cannot just hire these four professionals and walk away. You actively coordinate them, ensure they communicate with one another, and keep everyone aligned with the ultimate goal of protecting your child.
You really do. You hold the blueprint together. Which brings us to the final and perhaps most psychologically difficult phase of this entire process. You possess the legal structure. You assemble the expert team. But none of this survives if you fail to navigate the human element before it is too late. We have to discuss the conversation you must have with your family.
Yeah, nobody wants to sit their kids down, talk about their own impending death, and explain why the inheritance is going to look unequal on paper.
It represents a massive psychological hurdle, but parents must initiate a calm, incredibly clear conversation with their other children now. You cannot have this conversation hastily in an attorney's waiting room, and you absolutely cannot leave it for them to discover while reading a will after you are gone.
How should parents frame this then?
You explicitly present the unequal inheritance as a moral decision designed for vital support. You clarify that it does not represent a financial punishment leveled against the neurotypical siblings. You are simply ensuring that the sibling who requires lifelong support actually receives the infrastructure to survive.
It's also about setting firm boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And establishing freedom for those neurotypical siblings.
Mm-hmm.
You have to name what they are not responsible for. You look your kids in the eye and say, you are not going to serve as the representative payee constantly fighting with the Social Security Administration. You are not expected to act as the unpaid full-time caregiver. You are not expected to drain your own checking account to pay for medical equipment.
Yes, that is so crucial.
The entire reason the special needs trust exists is so those siblings do not have to carry those crushing burdens.
You actively preserve their relationship as siblings rather than forcing them into the strained roles of warden and dependent. If we connect this to the bigger picture, choosing to avoid this difficult conversation, choosing to avoid the attorney fees, or choosing to simply do nothing, that is not a neutral act. Doing nothing makes a very specific, destructive decision.
It guarantees chaos. If you die without a plan, the direct inheritance destroys the government benefits automatically. What actually happens in that vacuum when a parent just disappears without leaving a legal structure behind?
Cold, bureaucratic courts step in. A judge, who knows nothing about your child, appoints a random legal guardian. Medical decisions suddenly fall to whoever hospital staff can manage to get on the phone first, regardless of that person's actual understanding of the individual's complex needs.
What a nightmare.
It gets worse. The Social Security Administration scrambles to assign a representative payee, and they may assign someone entirely unsuited for the complex task of managing those funds.
You essentially decide to leave a deeply vulnerable child entirely alone. You force them to face a complex, unfeeling institutional system that operates strictly on rigid rules and paperwork, with no one to advocate for their actual humanity.
Procrastination represents the ultimate enemy of security in this scenario.
Let's bring all of this together. The core message of Jem Palesti's brilliant work is undeniable. Relying on a standard will is actively dangerous to a disabled adult. Relying purely on the goodwill of siblings is incredibly unfair to everyone involved. And doing nothing creates an absolute catastrophe.
Building a special needs trust, coordinated by a specialized team of professionals, provides the only viable structure designed to empower and protect your family across generations.
If there is one thing to take away from this deep dive, it's that hoping for the best simply is not a strategy. Whether you are actively planning for your own family right now, or you're just trying to understand the massive systems operating around us, knowing these traps exist is the first crucial step to dismantling them.
Absolutely.
You hold the power to change the trajectory of your family's future. Do the difficult work right now while you are capable, so your child never navigates this bureaucratic chaos alone. And please, dive deeper into these vital strategies by grabbing a copy of Jim Palasty's When the Bus Stops Coming, available right now at oasisforautism.com.
This raises an important question. As we look at the immense, costly effort families must exert simply to protect their disabled loved ones from catastrophic benefit loss, we must look outward. If strict federal rules, like an inflexible $2,000 asset limit established decades ago, can so rapidly and easily dismantle an individual's entire healthcare and survival safety net, what does that reveal about how our broader society truly views the fundamental right of disabled individuals to achieve any real level of financial independence?
It is a profound question, and it highlights exactly why you must build your own shield. Because you cannot control the federal government, but you absolutely can control your own planning. Do not build a beautiful, sturdy house for your child only to accidentally throw away the key. Give them the trust, give them the team, and give them the key to a secure future. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious and take action.